Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
But first this morning, Davy Russell is one of the most successful jockeys this country has ever produced. The highlights of his career include a run of wins at the Cheltenham Festival, including the Gold Cup. He rode Tiger Roll to victory in the 2018 Grand National and again in 2019. And he won a slew of races on home soil, including the Irish Gold Cup and Champion Hurdle. Well, in a book simply called My Autobiography, he describes how a demanding and dangerous sport has shaped his life. His co-writer is racing writer and pundit Don McLean. And Davy Russell joins me now from our Cork studio. Good morning, Davy. I know your dad was and still is a big hurling man, but was there horse racing in the family, Davy, too?
Not so much, but Dad had a huge love for horses and racing. And he started breeding a few horses, and he'd always have a horse in training, you know, as an owner. And he was a busy man. We had a business in town. He had a garage, petrol pumps. You know, he sold cars. He had a huge mechanical business. And he just had a huge interest in racing. He loved going point to pointing and just sport in general. But he was and still is a big hurling fan. Yeah.
And he's going strong, isn't he?
He is, out of fear of him, yeah. Still giving out, and that's always a good sign.
Yeah, keeps people going. Now, listen, your big break, I think, came in 1999 and involved a man called Pat O'Connor and a horse called Spanish Castle. Tell me about that, and what did that win change for you?
Yeah, well, it was an amazing day, really, because when I arrived at the races, I wasn't due to ride Spanish Castle. But we'll just say about 5 days beforehand, I was in a schooling area where people generally come to school horses. Pat didn't have someone to school Spanish Castle. I schooled him. That was grand. Never thought any more about it. I arrived at the races that day and he was going spare. So his regular jockey had picked another horse in the race. And he asked me, was I interested in riding him? I said, of course. Spanish Castle won. It was a fantastic day. I can remember every bit of it right now. I can't remember what I'd done yesterday, but I can remember that day. And it was in Tallow, about, you know, two fields away from where my dad was born and grew up, between Tallow and Connah. And he won, and it was an amazing thing. It took me 3 years, and, you know, loads of work and loads of rides, and finished second and third and fourth on horses, but it took me 3 years before I rode my first winner. And then when I rode Spanish Castle to victory, I rode my next winner 7 days later. I rode my first winner on the race course, you know, kind of 10 days later. And from there on, it just snowballed. I ended that season being champion novice rider. I tied it with a good friend of mine in Simon McGonigal, who plays a huge part in Gordon Elliott's yard. And the next year then I was novice champion on my own. I rode a lot of winners that year, and I went on to be champion senior rider, and we'd foot and mouth, so we didn't have the full season. And then myself and John Thomas McNamara went at it hammer and tongs the season after, and, you know, every year we kind of broke records as we were going along. Now, since them records are well broken, except for the novice rider, I still hold that one. But Derek O'Connor and Jamie Codd and them lads had a lot to say about records by the time we were finished. But it just snowballed from there. From once I got the breakthrough that day in Tallow, I don't know what it was, and it just, the winners, I rarely had to wait too long for another winner.
Now, every jockey, I suppose, has a different style, a different technique, but you tell us in the book that you rode by feeling, by intuition. Explain that to me.
Yeah, I'm not, and I never was very good at taking direction or maybe, if something was mapped out in front of me, I wasn't the best at following it. It's an amazing thing with horses. Obviously, there's no verbal connection between you, and it's all feel. So everything you do on a horse, you do it through a feel that the horse is giving you. And all my life, that's the only way I ever rode. I rode through the feel I was getting, and I used to change things. I never really made up much of a plan before a race. You know, there's an outline plan. You do your homework, you study your opposition, you know, ground conditions, weight, distance, all of that. That's easy enough for me. But as the race is run, I used to just kind of take it furlong by furlong or fence by fence and just use go and feel the whole time.
And actually at one point, to that point there, you describe yourself as a passenger, but like, to what extent does the horse know what's expected of it? I mean, surely you're way more than a passenger.
Not really. You must understand they're bred and trained to do this specific thing, and they actually really enjoy it. And you know, there's different areas in equine. You know, the show jumping, cross country, racing, hunting. But race horses love to run and jump, or just run. Well, let it be the flat. And the jockeys part to play in that is to control that energy that they have. Mm-hmm. Whether you need to motivate them through that or regulate it through slowing them down. And I suppose as a jockey, you just has to learn that. And what you kind of have to do is you have to put huge trust in the horse, and you have to kind of just be as at one with him and not to interfere. The less you do on their backs, mm-hmm. the easier it is for them to do what they love doing. I mean, you're dealing with another brain as well, another body, you know, in the horse. You know, he has a mind of his own. So all of them things have to be, you have to be at one. You have to gel together very quickly.
Really interesting. You say at one stage, you know, things were going well. I was like a spoilt child, you write. When was that, Davy? And what did you mean by that?
Well, I had everything at my feet. You know, I was riding the best of horses. Everything I wanted to do, I could do it. I was driving a big car. I was riding the best of horses. I was a professional jockey. I was living the life, really, you know. I was just really, really enjoying myself.
Now, look, you, of course, rode many winners for Michael O'Leary before you broke up. What happened there?
Look, it was as much my fault as anything. Well, it was probably all my fault, really. Michael was quite adamant that I'd concentrate more on his horses, and I was, you know, still very eager to get outside rides and ride for as many different people as I possibly could. My weight was an issue as well. You know, I struggled doing the light weights, and I felt when I wasn't trying to mind my weight, I wasn't doing my job correctly. So Michael was very aware of that, and he felt that I didn't ride at my best when I was losing weight, or I was riding lighter than what I would be comfortable doing. So he was of the opinion that I shouldn't ride below kind of 10 stone 9, 10 stone 10, and I was quite happy riding at less. Again, I'm not the best at taking instruction or direction, as it's a trend through my life. But yeah, we had a bit of a breakup then. We had a very poor Leopardstown at Christmas time, and you know, that's a big meeting that you want to be. You're riding for the biggest stable in the country, and you'd want to be riding winners there. Now, I rode winners at the festival, but none of them were for Jigginstown. And I think Michael kind of felt then that the whole thing was catching up, and he was happy enough to change pilots, excuse the pun. you know, I was upset. I'd given it everything, so I had to reset the clock and kind of pretty much start from zero again, because when you ride for Jigginstown or a yard or an owner like that, it's all consuming. You don't have time to get around to other people and you know, show interest in their horses. So I'd kind of lost my ties with other trainers and things, but you know, they all quickly came back and quickly came on board. There was, I suppose, the one thing I take from my career was that, you know, people I rode for when I was in my teens, I rode for when I was 40, you know, in my late 40s. So that was very nice. And I think on my last season riding, I only had one outside ride from Gordon's, and it was for Robert Widger, and that won. And it was really nice to be able to do that. You know, myself and Robert started off at a very young age riding together, and Gordon, there was a pack of us there together. So we all grew up and we all got on well together, and we ended together.
Which is lovely. But you said there, and you've said it a few times now, that you're not great at taking instruction. I suppose when you look back now at Michael O'Leary, when he broke off his connection with you at that time, Do you think you could have compromised more with him, maybe in terms of technique, weight? And do you ever think it would have been worth hanging on to one of those best jobs in racing? Or are you at the stage where you've no regrets?
Oh, I've no regrets. I suppose the beauty of that, and it's life in general. Look, Mir, you'll wake up in the morning, you think this is the worst decision you've ever made, or this is the worst thing that's ever happened to you. But for me, I felt that day on New Year's Eve. I thought this is just detrimental to everything. You roll on 2-3 months later and I ride the winner of a Gold Cup, which I wouldn't have been able to ride if I was with Jigginstown. So, you know, there's ups and downs and ins and outs. And look, myself and Michael got back together and we had huge success afterwards. So, look, I don't bother dwelling on any one situation. As a whole, I can look at my career as a whole and think, yeah, I wouldn't change a thing. I'd go back to when I was 16. I'd pretty much do it all over again.
Describe Tiger Rowe. What set him apart?
On the big day. So the bigger the day, the bigger the race, and the more you wanted out of him, the better he was.
Wow.
He was grow a hand, you know, he was grow an inch. He was like, for the sake of a lad stepping out in Crow Park on the All-Ireland final day or at the Olympics or wherever it is, he was at his very best on the big day. But like, you'd have to give credit to Gordon and the way he prepared him and had him ready for them big days. But he was the one fella that you would rely on the big day, was Tiger Rowe. He stepped up to the plate every time. You know, he on numerous occasions, the bigger the occasion, the better he was. He just loved the crowd. He loved the noise. And where other horses could shrivel up and maybe not be as good on the big day, he was the opposite. He looked bigger on the television than he was in reality, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So bring me back to that Grand National in 2018. You and Tiger Rowe. What went right for you that day?
As a jockey, you know, when you're riding a horse, your main objective is to get into a pocket of comfort that the horse is comfortable and the jockey, the rider, is comfortable in. And, you know, it sounds easy, but it doesn't always work that way. So that day in the Grand National, I've rode in previous Grand Nationals, 10 or 15 Grand Nationals, and, you know, I was comfortable for a lot of them in the race, but, you know, a fall or a bad mistake or horse not good enough. But Tiger Rowe, both occasions he was in the Grand National, he just slotted into them pockets, and he had the ability and he had the will to win a Grand National, which not every horse, it doesn't suit every horse, but you don't know that until you try it. It's a big event and there's a lot going on. And not every horse can transfer his race course form over normal fences, we'll call them, to a Grand National over them big green different types of fences. And the distance and the amount of runners in it and the whole foray that goes with it, it's a big day and you need a very, very special horse to do it.
And the excitement of those days. I mean, how did you know, Davey, when it came, that it was time to call it a day, time to retire?
I genuinely think I hit a sweet spot. Gordon had said to me, it was very aware to me that Jack Kennedy was he's a very good pilot. He was very young and up and coming rider. And I think Gordon had wanted me to keep my role in the yard for as long as it took Jack to mature into replacing me. And I was well aware of that, very aware of it. And we never spoke about it, myself and Gordon. We never spoke about it much, but you could see that Jack was, you know, he was coming through. I was in my 40s, you know, there's only so much there's only so long I could hang on anyway. And Jack was ready to go and ready to take over the mantle. And I had enough done, you know, you get a fall, you don't get up as quick. I didn't get that many falls, but when I got a fall, I usually get a very bad one. And I used to break. And your just recovery from injury is not as fast and you don't bounce as good as you do when you're in your, you know, 30s or 20s. It was just time. And I felt I'd hit a sweet spot in my career that I was happy to. I had no regrets.
And as you say, you did suffer some terrible injuries. Do you advise your children, who I know you're close to all of them, against becoming jockeys?
No, no, because they're so far away from becoming a jockey. But what they are doing now is it's such a marvellous thing to be able to do. And it's the same as a kid being able to play tennis, or a young child being able to, you know, play hurling at it. And you could just see it in kids that are able to do it. And fortunately, my eldest two, well, Jamie before them, but the two at home, Lily and Finn, they're able to sit up ponies and ride them. And it brings so much joy to me to be able to watch them do that.
What replaces racing? I mean, even when you were speaking there about Tiger Roll and the Grand National, I mean, there's a lot of excitement. Can anything replace it?
The buzz? Yeah, look, you get, as a jockey, you can't get too excited about it. You know, you pass the line and, you know, you get excited, but you must go back to ride another one, you know, 15 minutes later. So you can't get too high and you can't get too low. So I used to try and keep in the middle somewhere. So me watching a race now, or watching my kids compete, that brings huge joy to me. You know, or even if there's a horse there that I'm involved in that's running in a race, I'd get more excited than I would have been when I was riding them. So I just love the sport. I love being around the animals and watching the lads compete and watching other horses run still brings huge joy to me.
Now, your lovely wife, Adele, I mean, how does she feel about your retirement? Are you around the house too much these days?
She gives me plenty of jobs now, to be honest. I'm busier now than I was when I was riding. She's very happy with the whole situation. And she just, whatever makes me happy, she's happy, you know.
And just before we went in there, you mentioned, because we were having a bit of crack, that you've never drunk. Have you? You've never had a drink, Davey?
No.
It's still unusual in Ireland today, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah. But it was more so the taste. As a child, I didn't enjoy the taste of it. But my dad always said, I used to tell him I want to be a jockey. Well, if you do, he says, no drink. Mm-hmm. He said, no drink, no messing around. I'd done plenty of messing around, but I took him on with the drink part of it. I didn't drink. He never drank. My dad never drank. Now, when I say I would have, I mean the width of my fingernail of a drop of red wine. Or a white wine just to taste it, but I've never been drunk. I had a can of Budweiser under the bridge in Dungarvan at the junior short results, and kind of the taste of it just never appealed to me. And I'm kind of lucky I don't drink, because when I go at something, I do go at it awful hard, yeah.
Well, Davey Russell, thanks very much for going into our Cork studio today. The book is called Davey Russell, My Autobiography, and it's published by Arrow Books. And Dave, you're going to be signing copies of the book in Easons in Mallow on the 9th of November at 12 midday. Thanks, Davey. Mind yourself, and see you at Jim Bulger's charity.
No, you said it. Thank you.
Take care. God bless.